Cool. Good evening. So my name is Amir. I head up the machine learning research and at Benevolent AI. Today I'm going to talk to you about a topic that I think gets overlooked a lot in media and research, but I think has a great potential in terms of delivering good impact of AI in society. I think that is AI augmentation and creativity. So I think the previous speaker, in the last slide, a phrase about the human-machine interaction. So this basically takes that as a center stage and expands on that. But I didn't know basically that previous speakers, what they will be talking about. So I introduced a little bit of intro to AI, so forgive me if you know all of this. But we can go through a 60 seconds crash course on history of AI. So 50s and 60s, we started it. We thought that's very easy. So famously, some professors, they thought that computer vision would solve within 3 months, which that 3 months is still going on right now. So a lot of basically naivety back in 50s and 60s, which goes also with optimism that we had at, probably at 50s and 60s, that we were a very optimistic society as a whole. So then came 70s and 80s, and that was what we call AI winter, where basically fundings were cut, promises that were made never materialized, and basically there was just drought within that those decades. Then came 90s, starting new century, and I think started looking through machine learning very, very seriously, and I think previous speakers mentioned what machine learning is. So when you have programs that can program themselves, as a designer, you don't design every details of a program, but basically design a framework that allows the program to look through data and adjust itself and learn from that. And I think a big driver at that stage was internet. It helped us a lot. And I think the early uses of machine learning industry comes back to that those days with optical character recognition, spam filters, search engines, etc. Then we came to, about 7 years ago, 2010s, and something happened. We discovered something that we lost, which was called neural networks. People tried to rebrand it so that they can basically get a new term to the field and make it more confusing for people. So we have now deep learning, which is equivalent to neural networks, and that led to massive improvements in terms of what machines are capable of doing. And also we found that if you have large data sets and GPUs, that goes hand in hand together. So I think most of the hype that you see now and most of the things that you hear is basically through the rediscovery of neural networks and which happened back in that day. So I'll give you an example. Again, previous speakers have mentioned this. So if you take object recognition as a task where you're given an image and you're asked to say what is in the image. So back in 2007, a new challenge in the computer vision community started, which is called ImageNet. Which is about being able to classify images into about 1,000 categories, and these are very different and numerous categories are there. So here you see the hierarchy of, for example, going from mammals to husky and what is in between. So a machine should be able to tell you, given an image, which kind of category it belongs to. And I think back in the 2010s, so the best of the systems we had were able to do on this task about 25% of error rate. So I don't think that is good enough for any application, a serious application. So if your phone works 3 out of 4 times, I don't think that you will be happy with that. So good progress at the time, but I think it's still very far away from something that can put it in actual practice. And we humans are very good at this. So we are about 5% error on this task. Again, it's a very challenging task for humans as well because there are so many different categories that you can make mistakes. So fast forward to 2017, so we have these neural networks that now can get about 2.5% error on these data sets, which basically starts to surpass not only humans, but make it possible that you can then build applications, solid applications out of these. And these are the enablers and drivers of what you see in terms of application AI right now. And again, if you think of self-driving cars, they need to see the world. And again, if you can do computer vision well, then you can start thinking about self-driving cars. And it doesn't also stop there. So I think in terms of the applications, so we have speech recognition, which is getting a sound wave and transcribing the language, or machine translation, so translating from one language to the other, or any different mix and match of data modalities. So in the bottom right, we have image captioning, which basically you give an image, you ask the system to describe the content of the image. And in here, for example, it gives a fairly good good answer, saying that a group of people shopping at an outdoor market, there are many vegetables at the fruit stand, which fairly describes well what happens in the image. Or on the left-hand side, we have question and answering, which is give a piece of text, and the machine has to read it, and then you can ask questions about the text and then expect the right answers. And again, we are making fairly good progress in terms of the accuracies on these kind of tasks, and each of these are opening new potential applications, being in the industry or elsewhere. So, of course, with all this successes, inevitably comes the hype, and I think machine learning community has been back from the 50s been poisoned with hype. I think there's lots of mismatch between what we expect these systems to be doing and what they deliver, and vice versa. So I think a lot of people use the Gartner hype cycle, which was referred to. I'd rather have another graph which shows time and our expectations from it. And I think early on we often overestimate what the systems are capable of doing, and suddenly a change happens. And after that, we actually underestimate often what these systems are capable of, which I think is very, very true with the AI. I think, especially when it comes to the fuzzy language that we are using, so stuff like wherever that we talk about AI, public probably has the mental image of kind of from science fiction, a lot of killer robots and bad stuff happening to people. By use of AI, that doesn't help when our media and tech journalism is also joins this hype. So this is a recent, about 3 months ago, Facebook did a paper a research paper on two AI bots that are talking to each other. They're negotiating and trying to come up with some rewards for themselves. So nothing really threatening or anything. And then look at what basically media took out of that. So we have, Facebook's AI system, robots got shut down after they start talking to each other in their own language, or Facebook teaches robots to negotiate and they learn to lie. And these are basically very reputable media outlets. So, we are not talking about, just some random blog post here and there. These are, Wired or independent. So there is a big gap as well in terms of the language that we use for AI. We try to make the news that comes up in AI very close to what people have from science fiction, and I think that basically clouds the space. And that leads to basic two key misconceptions. So I think, and people often fall into one of these two spectrums. So either they think that the AI is here to take over the world, and we are just doomed, or AI is all hype, and this is all just smoke and mirrors, which is not the case. I think we are in a spectrum, and I think we are somewhere in between. And I think, in terms of other misconception that people often think is that the progress of AI often should or would translate to automation, meaning that if we make progress in AI, that would lead to us being jobless, and we will be replaced by soulless machines and which again is not true, because I think, and that is the next part of my talk, which is about how we can use AI to augment humanity and make best use of basically both. So I think in terms of the full automation, I showed this graph before, but I think in terms of full automation, so we're still very far away from being able to be replaced completely with robots, but I think in terms of where the technology is, we are quite close to be able to work collaboratively with software, work collaboratively with AI to help us be better at what we do. And I can give you some examples of that. So this is the only pitch for a company I work for. So I don't know how many of you know Benevolent AI? Some hands growing. So Benevolent AI, so we are an AI company based in London, probably one of the largest AI companies in the world. We specialize in using AI for advancing scientific discovery. And I think we've been focusing for the past 3 years in the field of drug discovery. And the premise goes as this, is that, you know, we have about one paper published every 30 seconds. So as a you know, scientist, you would be able to just you know, digest a fraction of this amount of knowledge that is out there. And this is exactly where, you know, machine learning can help, because they can basically scale, they can read all this material. And this is what we've been doing. So we've been trying to read all the scientific papers, try to get all the data that is about, let's say, drug discovery, about biosciences, through use of machine learning, turn that into a repository of knowledge that then our scientists can use. So we have drug discovery scientists in the company that could interact with this knowledge, can could explore this, and that accelerate their discovery. And also, you know, the in terms of the potential impact of this is that, you know, we can find treatments for very difficult diseases more quickly than otherwise possible. So who knows of these actresses or actors? Show of hands if you know any of these. Okay, so some hands going on. So actually these are all generated. So an area of machine learning that is basically progressing very rapidly, and again ties into the main topic that I'm presenting is generative models. So this paper from 2 weeks ago from research at NVIDIA, working on models that are now capable of creating images that look very authentic. And again, once you start looking through these, you can see the potential application here that, you know, as a content creator, as an artist, you could start interacting with these kind of systems and try to basically, you know, be better or be faster at what you're doing. And this expands to other areas. So we have, for example, generative design areas that we look into machine learning and these generative algorithms to be able to come up with better designs, again, in an interactive form with human. For example, here, you know, chassis of the car gets designed by these generative systems. Or on the left-hand side, you can see, you know, different architectures that could be created. And many of these are in a way very novel and interesting outcomes that you wouldn't expect from application of machine learning. I've been involved in a project in the last year with my better half. So we built we tried to apply machine learning to music. So we created a model that could compose polyphonic music. And at the time, it was probably one of the only models that could do that. And we basically tied that to a Twitter bot, so you could tweet at it and it could send you back a small clip of audio or music. And again, in here, you could explore the possibilities of having human and machine working together to compose music, which is I think, very, very interesting, because I think as a musician, if you want to, you know, be good at composing, you have to go through lots of practice, you have to go through lots of, studies, while, you know, majority of people like to make music if they could. So if you lower the barrier of entry for these people to be able to become more creative, I think that's a very good thing. And I think the last slide, which again is ties to music. So AI and education. I think this is also an interesting area where you can come up with personalized education and make it interactive so it becomes fun for people to learn. So this is an example from Sonic Pi. It's from Sam Aaron from University of Cambridge. So he has created this software that's very interactive, and he uses this to teach very small young children programming. But because it is reactive, it is interactive, and it is fun for people, so actually it absorbs them a lot, so they learn programming much faster than they could otherwise do by you know, simply following very rigid, you know, curriculum. So to sum it up, I think AI has very a big potential in terms of augmenting us, helping us to become better. And I think I hopefully showed you some, you know, cases that could happen. And I think, again, coming back to the original message I wanted to make, is that some of these use cases often gets overlooked. I don't think that, you know, either because of the hype or because of the sexiness of the technology that you develop, or the or the threatening aspect of, you know, replacing humans, etc., I think you often don't come back to where, you know, machine learning could be used for a good of society. And I think this could be one of those areas. Thank you.